This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. He does have a handout which he'll pass around to you. In every church, there are three types of people. I think this is true about the church where you come from. There are people who do their share of the work in church. And there are people who do less than their share of the work. And consistently, there will be people who do more than their share of the work. It's sometimes said that in a church or in an organization, you could pick out about one-third of the people and remove them. Actually, the percentage that's more often used is 20%. If you picked out the 20% who were the core of that church or that organization, and you removed them from the setting, you took them out of the church, they left the church, or they were pulled out of the organization, the remaining 80% could not maintain the thing. They could not hold it up together because the 20% did more work than the 80% did. Hopefully your home church situation is a little healthier than that. It's probably not better than 40-60. 40% of the people do 60% of the work. In a gathering like this, this would be a sad situation if we had a natural disaster here and all the people who were at Reach today were taken out of this life. Because how much of the work that's done by nonprofit organizations and even ministerial leadership is present from our church circles here today? Not all of it by any means, but a lot of the people who are workers are here today. The people who do more than their share of the work. You are the people who are involved enough to show up at a place like this. If something would happen that you are taken out of the picture, it's not like a plug and play where we just plug in another person in the business, in the company, in the organization, or in the church, and things keep on going. That's why it would be a sad consequence. We can't afford any natural disasters here today, so don't be the cause of any, because all these people need to go back to their jobs, to the businesses that they represent, to the churches that they are coming from, to keep these things going. Because the 80% that are back there, or 40%, or whatever the percentage is in your case, they can't keep the thing running without the minority that's away. What does burnout do? Burnout destroys the most productive people in church life, business life, and organizational life. You burn the best assets. You would have been better burning six others, but not that one, because that one could have done the work of six. I have a little example. Sometimes I do this as I have my prop here, and I don't today. Sometimes I bring for this topic a box I have. It's a pretty big wooden box, and that was pretty much to tote to Pennsylvania. So Steve is going to come, and he just volunteered to do this, because he's one of those people that will do more than his share. Steve, I don't have a box. How are you, Steve? I haven't seen you in a while.
Good to see you.
It is?
Yes.
Okay. He thinks it's good to see me. That's what some of you thought about some of the people who got you to do jobs too, huh? You thought it was good to see him. We're going to pretend there's a box here, and this box represents responsibilities, a job, a position, or a set of responsibilities. And my friend Steve, I've known Steve for a little bit. I don't know everything about Steve. I know some of the things he's involved in. I appreciate one of the organizations that he, at least one that he's working with and involved in. And I know that he was a worker to help put that together. So I need to put somebody in a box. And Steve's going to be willing to get in the box here, I think, won't you?
Yeah.
Get right down here in this big box for me. You're going to have to get on your hands and knees. That'll work. Why don't you, the box is turn this way. You're crooked. Yeah, you got more room that way. Okay, Steve's in the box. And I am now going to shut the lid. Conk. And then usually when they shut the lid, they then sit on it. Because they got a good one and they don't want this one out of the box. Now, if I had my props along today, I would try to talk to Steve through this box. His voice would be muffled, so this is better without the box. We have an invisible box. A little more than I used to weigh, huh? Yeah. I would ask Steve, what's in that box? Well, it's pretty dark in the box now with the lid closed, right? Most boxes are pretty dark when the lid's closed and you're in it. But he got in when the lid was still open, remember? So when he got in, he could see what was in the bottom of the box. And if I had my prop, in the bottom of that box would have been a lot of different hats, different kinds of hats, and we could pull them out of the box and hold them up here for you to see, or we'd get Steve to stand up and put each hat on in return. After a while, I would start asking Steve about how it feels to be in that box. But right now, I'm going to let Steve, good fella, go back to his seat. And we're going to think about this thing of being in a box. I don't know if you've ever felt like you were in a box before. What is it like to be in a box? Being in a box is cramping. You do not have liberty to do just anything you want when you're confined inside a box. And when you accept a set of responsibilities in an organization or in a company or in the church, you lose some of your freedom to do things that might be attractive to you. Okay, he mentioned I serve as a minister. I serve as bishop in our congregation. There'd be things I would like to do that I simply cannot do because I have ministerial responsibilities. I have to be there. I can only go away so much. Some of you can go to the mission field and enjoy that experience, and I can't. I have to stay home. I have to work at Anabaptist Financial Foundation and find money so you get to go do the good stuff. Okay? I'm cramped in some ways. But whatever box you have found yourself in life, being in a box puts you in a certain place, gives you certain liberties and certain responsibilities, but it does cramp you a bit. There are things that you give up by crawling into that box. You can, when you are in a box, begin to feel trapped. You feel that if I had had my real box here and had put Steve in it, shut the lid and sat on the lid, I usually leave the person in there for a while, like 10 minutes into the topic, and the person is trapped when they're in the box. Trapped in the sense that Steve's a pretty stout fellow. He could probably get out of that box. But there's no decent way to get out of the box. There's no unembarrassing way to get out of the box. And some of you have accepted responsibilities in a position that once you are in that position, you have those responsibilities, your freedom of movement is a little more real to you now. You realize what this restricts out of my life. You also realize there's no easy way out of this. It's not decent just to quit. You're not the type of person that would do that anyway. So you're cramped and you're trapped. And also when you're in the box, it becomes dark in the box once that lid shuts. You thought you understood what you were getting into, and you still think you have an idea about your circumstances, but there is some darkness that sets in for people who are trapped in a box. They no longer see clearly what their circumstances are. They begin to misunderstand their circumstances, and they begin to make assumptions. I would have asked Steve if there was anyone in the box with him. And there would have been, to his knowledge, no one else in that box. There wasn't room for anyone else in the box. People who are in a box, boxed in, they tend to start feeling lonely. That I am in this all by myself. I'm trapped. I'm restricted. There's no decent way out. and I'm all by myself. I talked about the hats a little bit, and I could have brought the hats. They would have been easier to bring and set them up on a table here. You wear lots of different hats, and we want to run down over some of those. Not to delve into the individual hats, but to understand that people like you, your life is complex. You have more than one set of responsibilities that you have to reconcile. What we're going to be talking today about, really, let's put this in. Two goals for the workshop: to have an honest conversation about your own workload and your options for moving forward, and to persuade you to protect the people who do the work that you say is important. Okay, now we say that lying is a bad thing, right? How many of you in favor of lying? You're just a big promoter of telling whoppers. No. Okay, good. You're good people. You don't believe in lying. Lying is a bad thing. It is bad to lie to other people. But do you realize that not only is it bad to lie to other people, it is bad and stupid to lie to yourself? So if you're going to be a liar, at least just lie to the other people. Okay? Don't lie to yourself. So in these two points here, there's two things that you don't have to speak out loud. I'm not going to ask for any feedback. You don't have to reveal yourself. But we're going to talk about you some in this session. Are you on the road to burnout? Or are you telling yourself some lies? Well, it's stupid to lie to yourself. You might as well tell the truth about your own situation. But then some of you here, I suspect, are in a position where you can burn out other people in a good cause. And are you on the road to doing that? That's worth looking at as well. When we are going to tell the truth, we're going to tell the truth to ourselves about workload. We need to acknowledge what we do to ourselves, be honest about it, and we need to acknowledge what we do to other people. Generally, people are not forced into boxes. They got in the box initially of their own accord. They may have been asked, there may have been some pressure applied, but you are not forced to do the job you do. You have some role in this. Type of hats people wear. I was a school administrator once upon a time. That was a position where I was burned out in my life. As I thought about the work that I had in that school system, I had all of these hats on my head. I was in charge of personnel, HR. I hired people. And even when I fired a teacher, I found out the board didn't want to do that. That was my job to fire a person. Academics, you know, that's the program that you have. And you can try to translate this over into whatever type of organization program you're involved in. The what of what we do, the tools that we use to perform our program. I was in charge of the organization of the entity. So ultimately, all the schedules, the training, the public events, the communication with the constituency, that all fell back on this administrator. In charge of the facilities, making sure that there was a cleaning crew, that jobs were performed, maintenance was kept up, overseeing the equipment needs in the facility, and keeping in mind the future capital projects. Compliance. We had certain governmental reporting that we needed to do, and is our state attendance report sent in? As are all of our health inspections or our health immunization records, are they all kept up? We had institutional policy. I mean, they had, you know, the big binder that has, you know, since this organization's been in existence for 25 years, we have 1,000 rules about how we do things. How to unbend paper clips when they get bent. And those need to be carried on because those are all very important. And then we have church politics. And I don't know, maybe you don't have to administer or deal with church politics. When I was in school, in one sense, I thought I wasted 4 years studying political science. And then I joined the Mennonite Church.
and it's all quite useful. It all applies. So you deal with political issues as well, and if you're an administrator in a nonprofit organization, you know that you have to navigate some of those waters. You have to reconcile people and help them understand that they are actually friends. Client care, different areas there, pastoral work. You are kind of like the pastor for your organization or your division of the organization, and you actually are responsible for the spiritual welfare of the people who are working underneath you. And then the finances, making sure there are budgets, cost controls are in place, payroll is made, and raising the money. Okay, just to understand, there's all different types of hats, and maybe you just go through there and visually you put check marks by ones that apply to you. Which of those are things that you have to wear that hat part of the day? I'll give you just a moment there. It would really be something if you only, if you could have a job where you just had one hat. Wouldn't that be something? Mm-hmm. That you had one thing to do and you were passionate about it. It overlapped perfectly with the thing that you would have chosen to do. So this is my job. It's exactly what I wanted to do, and there are no distractions. There's no other things that I have to do. That's not really the reality for people like you. People like you, because of the structure of our organizations, the work scope of the work that we have, the amount of warm bodies that we have, you wear more than one hat on your head. And perhaps even in the course of one day, you find yourself taking the hat off and putting a different hat on for a little while and going back and forth. And it produces some wear and tear on you. Let's go back. Forget about that a little bit. Just kind of look over here again. Think about this box. Mentioned that most people go into boxes voluntarily. I think you do, because of the circumstances of life and maybe the providence of God, you get backed into some situations that if you had planned your life out, this would not have been in the plan of your life. You didn't see this coming, but because this happened in your life and because you were here and then this person left, you were asked to take on an extra responsibility. I will acknowledge, although you choose the boxes you climb into, you often do get maneuvered into situations that were not entirely of your creation. Is that you? Okay. You didn't actually choose all of these hats, and you didn't really understand the box that you were getting into. It is important, just in a loose sense, to understand who puts you in a box. If you are the person who puts yourself in that box by your own foolishness, your own failure to ask questions, your own willingness to say yes to everything that came along, then you bear responsibility for being in that box. If you're looking for whose fault it is that you feel the way you do now, well, you probably need to start with yourself, because you may be primarily responsible for the box that you're in. If you put yourself in a box, then you have a problem to solve. Three little suggestions there for you. You're not going to get out of any box that you're in unless you accept whatever degree of ownership you have in getting into that box. Okay? So are you 5% responsible for that list of responsibilities you have now? Are you 50% responsible, or are you 95% responsible? You're somewhere in there. But you have some responsibilities for the distress that you feel or that is beginning to rise inside you. Accept ownership for it. You need to seek counsel. You need to seek advice. Because you know why? You were not smart enough to avoid getting in this situation. You got in this situation mostly because you relied on your own ability to think through the situation and to evaluate your strengths and weaknesses and the task at hand and how much light and dark there is in that box and how many hats were in there before you crawled in. It was your judgment failure that led to at least a part of your situation. So if your foolishness got you into the situation that you're in, you probably don't have the wisdom to get out of it on your own. You probably need to go talk to someone else. You talked to yourself the first time, and this is where you're at now. So now you need to go get advice somewhere else. The third point is that you do need to move forward. If you do nothing, you will stay in the box. And the box probably is not going to get any lighter. If God put you in a box, maybe you evaluate it and you did not make foolish decisions. We would say the circumstances of life, which is another way of saying the providence of God, put you in a position, gave you a set of responsibilities. If God bears responsibility for that, then this is actually an opportunity. Maybe it isn't a box. Maybe it's more like a tunnel. And you just didn't realize that there's one end out of this box and it goes somewhere. It's too dark for you to see that right now. You can rest in knowing that God knows you better than you know yourself. He knows your weaknesses. He knows what needs to be improved. But he also maybe knows some strengths that you have that even you are not aware of. He has a plan and a vision for growth in your life. He wants to make you into something that you aren't. Therefore, he needs to subject you to some pressures you have not yet experienced. Pressure brings change. Sometimes it brings good change and sometimes it brings bad change. But pressure brings change. You may be experiencing the pressures you are experiencing in ministerial life, organizational life, company life, because God has a plan for you. He can't put that part of the plan into place until he changes something about you. And you are at this place in your life because he has work to do on you. And when he has done this work, he will let you out of this box and send you to the place that he plans to have you work. God certainly has a supply of grace available. That means you can do the things that you ought to do. Grace is a God-given ability to do what you ought to do. If you ought to do it, then God will help you do it. God will put others around you to soften your shortcomings. You all have people who work around you, and whether you realize it or not, you have serious deficiencies in your life, in the way that you do things, in the way you look at the world, in the way you approach things. And God has probably hand-picked another person, and they might be the most irritating person you work with, but he's hand-picked someone to help change your life, because he knows what's wrong with you. And also, it works the other way too, two-way street there. The only reason you might be in this job or at this organization is because God needs you here for a little while, because he needs you to help change him so that he can do something else later on. And as soon as you help change him, God's going to release you to go do something else. But right now, you're here to help him. That's a little easier to think about, because I'm here to help Mark, or Mike, instead of Mike's here to help me with my weaknesses. Rusting out, burning out. Rusting out implies inactivity. It sat there. It got rusty. It froze up. It wasn't useful anymore. Burning out implies intense activity, but they both result in lost usefulness. I don't suspect that most of you are the type of people who will end up rusting out in life. You're not involved in organizations. You're not moving toward recognition for leadership if you're the type of person that sits around. You're probably the type of people who are in the 20%. You're probably the type of people who do more than your share at church and at work and in anything you're involved in. You are probably the type of people that would do this. Of the two, you would burn out rather than rust out. However, burning out damages God's work. You just ruined one of his tools. Okay, if you borrow somebody else's tool, your dad's tool or your neighbor's tool, you return it in as good or better condition than you received it, right? Isn't that what your dad taught you? Okay? You don't even belong to yourself. You belong to God if you're his child. And God has a plan for using all of his tools. And if you, by your own negligence, your own pride. You cause yourself to become burned out. You are damaging God's tool. And when you damage God's tool, you inhibit God's ability to work as he had intended. Understand that burnout is something that you do to other people. Some of you are guilty of this. I mean, there are some sinners in this room. You are the person that was responsible for overloading someone, and you are damaging one of God's tools. This is wrong. Characteristics of burnout. When a person is burning out, their love of their work begins to disappear. You know a time in your life when you could not wait to go to work, right? You woke up in the morning and you were ready to go. You wanted to go do whatever your set of responsibilities was. And you may know the different time of life when you don't want to wake up in the morning. You know the time of life when you're marking days off the calendar till the end of this assignment or the end of this responsibility. Or you find yourself watching a clock because it's 2 more hours and 2 minutes till I can get out of this office. Okay? A love for work. God made people to love work. Work is not a punishment. People worked before the fall of man. They had assignments. They had responsibilities to do. God built people to work and to love work. Love of work being lost is a sign of danger. Diligence to routine tasks begin to fade when a person is burned out. I told you I was a school administrator and I had all these hats to wear. And for 3 years, I filled 2 positions in school. We were supposed to have a full-time administrator at that school. And we were short a high school teacher. So for 3 years, I taught a full load. And I did what I was supposed to be hired for, full-time administration. By the end of 3 years, I was done. I lasted 1 more year just by drifting, but I was done after 3. I remember one morning, the 4th year, I came to school, and I was always the first one to school, so I got there somewhat after 7 o'clock maybe, and the school was cold. And I thought about it. One of the jobs that was on my list, it's under facilities maintenance, is every month I would go out and we had this big long stick and we had a buried oil tank and you would stick the stick down in and you would measure it and you would go in and you would write the measurement on a little chart that we kept so you could gauge your fuel usage. So you knew well in advance when you needed to order heating fuel for the school. It was a small task. You got to walk outside, get some fresh air. It took perhaps 2 minutes, but it was a routine task. Well, school was cold, and I had to call for a quick shipment of heating oil because I failed to maintain a routine task. People who are burned out will start dropping routine tasks. The types of things they're so sorry that they forgot to do it. They sincerely are sorry. You can hardly punish them or chew them out for forgetting, but they forgot something that they would have never forgotten before. I mean, they did this just like they blinked their eyes automatically in life. Burned out people will do that. Focus shifts from long-term results to short-term answers. 2 types of questions you can answer for people in a day: hard ones and easy ones. The hard ones are what take your time, and those begin to be avoided. I had a problem with a staff member there at that school. She had a problem. And her problem was chronic tardiness. She barely arrived before the students. Occasionally, she wasn't ready when class started. She was a difficult individual with whom to deal. And I didn't want to deal with her. I would rather walk up to her homeroom and start the school day for her, and then smile when she came in and leave, then address the issue. Because I was burned out. I had enough problems to deal with. Rather than deal with Mrs. XYZ, I'll walk up there. I will watch the parking lot to see what time her car comes in. Plus, it makes me mad every day, and at this point, I want to be mad every day. So, you know, 8:27, she's not here yet. I better start heading up there. I had a long-term problem. It needed to be addressed for the long-term well-being. It was affecting the client base, and I refused to deal with it. Selective focus on responsibilities. At the same time, I would not deal with an HR problem. I persuaded the board of directors to start a building campaign because I like raising money. And we raised the money to add a new wing onto the school. I didn't have time to deal with an HR problem. Selective focus on responsibilities. When you're having a burned out person on your staff, or when you're being burned out yourself, you will start picking and choosing, or they will start picking and choosing what they do well at. Remember, these are the cream of the crop people already. These are the people that are 120% people. They want to excel. They want to contribute. And since they feel like they cannot do everything that's expected of them anymore, they're going to pick and choose. And they're going to pick something that they're going to hold on to with white knuckles. I am going to excel in this. This is something I can still do well. I can still hold my head up when I'm doing this part of my job. I can still feel good about myself. I can still be a benefit to the place where I'm working. So I will do very well on something. And that makes me feel much better about the things that I'm neglecting and letting go and unable to handle. Depression often sets in. Self-pity and resentment of others. Burned out people have very sharp eyes for the failures of others. They will have very sharp eyes for the boss's failures, for the failures at the board of directors level, and for the failures of those below them. Eyesight improves dramatically with burnout. Withdrawal. A person who normally enjoys good society and good company, they will leave as soon as possible. They will isolate themselves. It's a time when they need interaction the most, they need emotional support, they pull back into a shell. So if you see an employee starting to withdraw from normal social interactions, this is something you can question. Physical deterioration. I was so sick the last year I was at school, I did a lot of my work from the floor. I would shut the door, tell the secretary not to let anyone through to see me, and I would lay on the floor because I physically wasn't well enough to sit at a desk. Okay? Physical deterioration goes with burnout. The more severely the person is burned out, the more often they'll catch the cold, the more often they will just have stomach ache. The more often that headache will not go away, there is a physical connection to burnout. So when you start seeing deteriorating physical symptoms with an otherwise healthy employee, you can start question, why is this person always sick? Why are they, you know, they're maybe still coming to work, still trying to do their job, but you know they do not feel well. They look like they do not feel well. And there will be negative impacts on family and personal relationships. The person who never snapped at anyone in their life snaps at their wife. How do you rebuild after burnout? I'll offer you three little steps here. We're going to go general, and then I'm going to give you a biblical example, which is better than mine. Recognition. Somebody needs to be the adult who recognizes that there is a problem happening here. Maybe you're still big enough, you can be your own adult and recognize, I have a problem in my life. I am burned out, or I am heading toward burnout. Someone needs to recognize it. I think more often it will not be you. It will not be the person that this is happening to. They are sincere people. They're trying to do right. They're gonna when they drowned, they're going to have swum their last stroke. They're going to go down swimming, but they're going to go down because they're not going to stop and ask for help. The people around them need to recognize what's happening to them. The people who are putting responsibilities on them are responsible to recognize what's happening. They need to recognize that the end is either near or the end is here, and it's time for intervention. There is a step of cleanup where ownership has to be taken for this. Often you have to take your own ownership. I'm in this situation because I agreed to this, and then I agreed to this, and then I agreed to this. I did this to myself. Maybe someone else contributed. Maybe they leaned on me a little bit to take this extra assignment, but I did much of this myself. Maybe this is a place for some ownership on other people's part too, for a board of directors to say, you know what? It's our fault. We are asking this person to do more than a person ought to do. We are too proud to cut our program down. We would rather burn our people out than cut program. But people are more important than program, so we're going to take ownership here, and we are closing an entire program because we will refuse to burn our people out. We are not going to overwork our people. The biggest culprits here are school boards. Okay? School boards are the people who burn out more than any others. They burn out many good-hearted young people by overloading them with responsibilities at school and too much work. Take some ownership there. And once you take ownership, then you have to start rebuilding. Fix your upper project on your hands now. You're going to have some demolition. It's going to be messy for a little bit. We have to do some tearing out. But we're going to get down to something solid, and then we're going to rebuild. I want to go to what I call the Elijah model. It's from 1 Kings chapter 19 and following. The story we find there near the end of Elijah's ministry. You know the story. There was a magnificent moment in Elijah's life. What's that? Kind of like the crowning moment.
Mount Carmel.
And I think, you know, when I think about Bible stories, if I could go back and see one thing, that's one of the one things I would want to see. That time where the prophets of Baal have worn themselves out all day long, and Elijah goes up and he gives them a hard time. I'm that type of person. I would have given them a hard time too. Couldn't avoid saying a few things. And then he prays to God, and the fire falls down from heaven, and it burns up the sacrifice and the altar and the water, and all the people start shouting, what?
The Lord,
he is God, and Elijah's in command. Kill the prophets of Baal. The king is standing right there and does nothing. Elijah's in command. What happened immediately after the crowning moment of Elijah's career? Elijah collapsed. Total collapse. And that's what you can see in some burned out people. They can do some remarkable things right at the end before the candle burns out. When God dealt with Elijah, God catches up with Elijah in the wilderness. You read that passage, you maybe make that maybe your devotional study sometime in the next couple weeks here. What will you see? You'll see there was a gentle recognition that Elijah was at his end. I always wish God had said more than he said in the passage. But what did God say through the angel? The journey is too great for thee. God didn't say, get up and go back there and do it. He said, no, it actually was too much for you. This is too hard for you. Gentle recognition that he was at his end. He was allowed to run away. He was allowed to retreat from the stress, from that intense conflict, and he was provided with sustenance. He was taken care of at his very low moment. When he had recovered a little bit, then God started probing, but God probed gently. He asked Elijah, you tell your story, Elijah. What are you doing here, Elijah? and Elijah had a story to tell. God pushed back on that story. He clarified some things for Elijah. Elijah, it wasn't true that you were the only one. I have 3,000, 7,000? I had 7,000 left who would have backed you up. Now, that's not much out of a, you know, couple hundred thousand or a few million, but you don't quite have your facts right, Elijah. It wasn't quite as bad as you thought. But God was remarkably gentle in that. Burned out people usually have a story down pat because they've said it in their heads 100 times before they told anyone else, and they're not easily talked out of it. God corrected what Elijah had misinterpreted, misrepresented. I think it's very remarkable. Elijah was given new and different responsibilities. He was not sent back to talk to Ahab. You notice that? He was not sent back to deal with Jezebel. What would you have done? You would have picked him up, dusted him off, kicked him in the pants, and said, "No, get back up there and take care of that." Well, that was not the route that God chose in that circumstance. But he gave Elijah something to do. You go do this, and you can read the story of yourself. He gave him, I think it's two or three different assignments. It's at least two. I want you to go do this, and then I want you to go do this. He had work to do. The most debilitating thing you can do to a burned out person is to take away all their responsibilities, to give them nothing to do. Because the only reason they're burned out is because they're the type of people that were willing to work harder than everybody else. They wanted to work hard. They wanted to contribute. And you can't take it all away without destroying the person. You might need to take away what is causing the overload. You might need to reassign responsibilities. But you need to give them something affirmative to do. This is the next thing that you need to do. They will cling to that next thing like a drowning man to a life preserver because they want something to do. They hate it that they're in this condition. They want to be able to do better. He was given a helper and a successor. That's very important. Teaming someone with a person who can compensate for their weaknesses and also giving them a vision that you're not even going to be asked to do this forever. You need to train the next person who's going to come in your stead. That's a mission that that good-hearted people can embrace. Yes, I do want someone to be able to carry this on, and actually I want them to be able to do it better than I did it. So I will bond with this person. I will mentor this person. I want to be able to tell them what I did wrong. Share my weaknesses because I care so much about this organization that I'm involved in that I want it to succeed, and this is my chance to lock up the future by investing what I have left in the next person who's going to do my job. Elijah's contributions were honored, his failures were acknowledged, but only in the context of his successful work. God's an honest person. And we should be honest people as well. Screening for burnout, I leave you some questions. This is just sort of like your little take-home assignment. These are all printed in your handout, I believe. Do you have time? This is your personal screening. Okay? So you're taking this home and you're writing some answers after this to kind of get a gauge of, well, where am I actually at? Do I have time for my devotions and prayer life? Yes, no. Has the level of my performance decreased across the board? I'm not as effective at anything I'm trying to do. Am I shining out in one area, but all it's doing is covering up my neglect in other areas? Holding on to the thing I'm best at and kind of giving up on the rest. Do I come to work on Mondays feeling tired? Do you find yourself watching the clock or marking the calendar? Would you really prefer just to disappear from public? You often feel sad without being able to pinpoint a specific reason. Have you felt or said that you were carrying too much of the load? You let it slip, the resentment that's inside of you. Have you made decisions that you knew were only short-term fixes for what you knew were longer-term structural problems? Have you resigned yourself to that approach? Do you even really care that these short-term decisions are going to cause more problems, or is later just a good option because it's later? Are you often tired? Do you feel run down physically? And do you have someone who's expressed concern about you? Usually there will be someone who has noticed. It might be your wife. Often it's probably your wife, your husband, your spouse. Might be a coworker you're particularly close to, a friend, and they start being concerned. Don't lie to them. Okay? It's bad to lie, right? So if it's bad and they ask you how it's going, what do you say?
Good.
You don't say I'm fine. You tell the truth. And you can only tell the truth to people who are really your friends. You just need to go ahead and lie to the rest, because they don't, you know, you can say not good and, well, that's not what they were looking for. You know, they were lying by asking how are you. So I'm not advocating lying. You understand what I'm saying. There are certain people who would care, and the people who would care, when they express a concern, you best listen. Tell the truth about yourself and your organization. Are you damaging God's work by what you're doing to yourself or others? If you've been part of damaging God's work, what's your plan to fix what you just broke? And as an organization, will you commit to build and maintain program only if you can do it without breaking people? Thank you for your attention.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.